At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott is joining us right now. Hidden Killers contributor as well. As we continue to dive down the road of the case against Brian Koberger. I want to talk about the arguments that are being made on the part of Koberger first, because I think it's just interesting to kind of put them all into one category here, or one lump. Some of the big ones that we're currently looking at, the term phantom matches on the DNA, according to an affidavit by DNA expert Leah Larkin, who is an expert witness that was hired by the defense, despite other experts, many experts, most of the experts saying, you know, this is obviously, it's a science. There is not a lot of room for argument or saying that there something could have gone wrong or did go wrong or there's an error. No science is 100% perfect, but when you look at the odds, like 1 in 5.37 octillion, your odds are pretty good that it was a pretty good match. With them throwing things out there like phantom matches on DNA kits and such, what is their goal? Simply to confuse and make people think that the science is not anywhere near as solid as it actually is?
Yeah, definitely. That's what I think is going on. It's just, you know, the circumstantial evidence is so high with this case. And it just strikes me as, you know, we're going to throw every possible idea out there we can to put this in people's minds, you know, to put the doubt out there. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And it just strikes me as desperate, sort of like his alibi being, well, he likes to go driving around at night, which, as I said, kind of a red flag of somebody that could be a serial killer if, in truth, they are out driving around all night long as a frequent pastime. That's not necessarily in his favor. But if that's the best we can come up with, it's not a very good, you know, case.
Even if that is his alibi, and that's what they stick with, and they've said he can't really tell you where he was that night. He can't really say if he passed any place that could maybe have a camera or go along with his story. The only thing that we have is that his phone turned off in Pullman right before the murders took place, or about approximately the time it would take to get to Moscow from Pullman. And then it mysteriously turns back on after the murders took place, with him driving south and then eventually back to Pullman, Washington on this drive. Do you foresee them coming up with anything at this point? Do you think they're looking out there for anything that could corroborate the story? Or do they know damn well that there's not much to corroborate the story with?
Yeah, you know, my gut, I can't say my gut is 100%, but my gut is telling me they know damn they're not going to have the video of him over at Burger King or Taco Bell 50 miles away, you know, and they know he was there. And this is just, you know, try whatever they can come up with. And they must spend a lot of time sitting around and trying to think up what else can we throw out here.
Another thing that they've been throwing out, not necessarily in the last few weeks, but in the last few months, we've heard them subpoenaing information on officers that were involved in the investigation. We're not quite sure the angle they're going with that yet, if anywhere. It might have just been seeing what they could pull up. But tunnel vision kind of seems to be one of the areas that they're hinting at, suggesting that maybe law enforcement was so fixated on Koberger as the primary suspect that they might have ignored other avenues of the investigation. Do you feel like there's any legs to that sort of an argument?
Yeah, I don't see it. I just don't see it. I think when they, defense attorneys, you know, try to find anything they can in the histories of the investigating officers to try to show that they're, you know, in some cases they're racist or they're prejudiced or they, you know, they've got some kind of flaw or they've made these egregious mistakes and done things in the past that were inappropriate and wrong. It's just more, you know, what else can we come up with here? So let's look at the officers.
when they continue to try and dig at every single little thing they can, especially when we're talking about science like the DNA such earlier, the arguments aren't that strong. I mean, they say, well, look over here, this went wrong once with this. And you can look at that individual case and go, well, yes, this is why that went wrong. But that's not this case. Do you feel like the prosecution is going to have an easy time debunking some of these flailing arms up in the air going, what about this? What about that? And calming the jury down a little bit and showing them, look, yeah, they're going to say this, but this is, their arguments aren't really valid because the science they're talking about isn't really solid, or the chances of the science being bad, not very accurate.
Yeah, if I had to be on a team, I would definitely want to be on the prosecution's team with this, because I think they're going to have a great case, and they're going to have the best expert witnesses who can talk about the science. And I just don't see that the defense has much to stand on, if anything.
Obviously, I know no one can diagnose Koberger from a distance, but if we're just to take a look at him over the last, you know, nearly a year now, hard to believe as we get closer towards the end of this year, does he exhibit any characteristics consistent with any sort of psychological disorder or profile on the surface that you can discern that, you know, may play into what he's accused of doing?
Well, he's, I guess if the first words that come to mind from all the people that have been interviewed and talked about what they knew about him, he's an odd duck. He's a bit odd, but certainly never overtly crazy. Mm-hmm. And had a lot of social problems, a lot of problems interacting with women, easily angered, arrogant, you know, likes to be smarter than everyone else. Of course, he had the years of heroin addiction. He pulled out of that, but then he became very obsessive. He's quirky. He's strange. He's odd. And it would not surprise me that he had this secret fantasy life built around perverse kind of sexuality and the domination of women. That's a consistent theme that comes through, is this, you know, the uppityness, the narcissism, and the drive to, you know, dominate women and interact with women in strange ways. So that we can say that most serial killers are psychopathic, of course. They don't have empathy for other people. I don't see Brian as being a person who was very empathic or connected in any kind of close ways with people. The narcissism is common among serial killers, always being the smartest guy in the room. And we don't have evidence of him being sadistic, unless there is this kind of, let's say they're looking at his computer and they find a lot of sadistic porn, then that would fill in that blank, because certainly the person who committed the murders is sadistic. So you can certainly say there's enough of an indication there, even just glancing at him superficially, to say this is certainly plausible, that he could have the personality traits that we would see in a person that committed the murders.
Is there, we've heard this thrown out there a little bit, and it was, I can guess, somewhat connected to his early writings that were found online very early on from when he was a teenager about dissociative phenomena in him. Is there any indication from what we know that he might have experienced any sort of dissociative episodes or altered states of consciousness?
Yeah, you know, looking at those writings, I went through all of them a few months back, mm-hmm. and he struck me as somebody who, again, was trying to be smarter than everybody else. And he used a lot of jargon, but he didn't always use the jargon appropriately. And it struck me as someone who's just throwing words around. And there didn't seem to be a lot of meaning in it, other than the thing that came through so clearly in those writings was this obsessiveness. And he would write and write and try to instruct other people in these online forums. And he was really obsessed with his physical health. And it was rather sad in that he was such an isolated person, and doing all this writing online in these health-related forums didn't seem to have legitimate connections, you know, in day-to-day life, but really did want to be smarter than everybody else and using a lot of jargon. And it struck me as kind of regurgitating things that he had read in other places. And I had the feeling he's trying really hard to explain things about himself that he doesn't understand. He knows he's different, but he didn't know why. And I don't know that we certainly don't know the contents of everything that is in his computer and what else he was doing online. But I think if we had access to all that, we'd have a lot of answers.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.